Hello and welcome to What the Tech from Boost AI, where we talk with some of the brilliant minds behind new and exciting tech initiatives to learn what it takes to tackle technological uncertainty and eventually change the world. Today, I am thrilled to welcome to the show CEO and co-founder of MyArk, Peter Monteza. At MyArk, their mission is to power the fitness creators to get their fans fit and make a purposeful living while doing so. They've done this by creating a platform that enables fitness content creators to train their fans interactively at scale from anywhere in the world. MyArk takes care of the boring stuff, progressions, daily stats, and tracking, so that trainers can focus on the important part, content, advice, and motivation for their fans and community. It's an exciting mission and a powerful platform that's rooted in Peter's own experience training as a national level athlete. But Peter's drive and determination go beyond physical health, as he's proven to be an adept entrepreneur, having taken part in accelerator and incubator programs, including being part of Techstars 2022 cohort, on his journey as a founder. I'm excited to learn more about his experience in the startup world and what is in store for MyArk in 2024. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Peter.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much for having me. And that was a very lovely introduction.
Oh, my pleasure, Peter. I'm always happy to give a little intro at the top here, but I know I only scratched the surface. I would love to hear from you a little bit about your background and how you got into the startup space in the first place.
Yeah, you touched on it a tiny bit around I used to compete nationally. But before that, I actually used to be obese. So I actually struggled a lot with my physical and mental health. And I went from obese to a national level runner here in the UK in the space of about 2 years. So for me, fitness has been my biggest passion. It saved my life. And during that journey, I really saw how expensive personalized fitness was. And you fast forward a decade later, and it's still very, very expensive. And that's really the motivation behind MyArk. Right now, you either have really expensive personalized fitness or really cheap but generic one-size-fits-all type fitness solutions, which don't work for the majority of people. It needs to be custom to you, and that's what we're really solving for.
I love that. I know personally, I have been bouncing back and forth between free YouTube videos and then committing to doing a rowing class. And I never land in that middle spot where it's actually affordable and repeatable for me personally. So I loved just doing the research, looking into the possibilities here, and that it's also really focused on content creation. And I think that is a unique value driver for what you guys are doing there. Could we talk a little bit more about some of that unique innovation that you're driving with MyArk in that arena of, I think, content creation and also scalability and reaching people on their terms?
Yeah, 100%. That's a great question. So what we see is that fitness creators are the kind of next generation of trainers, right? And there's a really big difference between like a commercial personal trainer and a fitness creator. A commercial PT is, on the gym floor, will average 10, 12 clients in one geographical location. But a fitness creator can have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of followers based in different parts of the world. So now the question is, how can you provide personalized fitness at scale? Because the traditional PT, they can, manually customize plans, etc. But a fitness creator, it's impossible for them to customize 1,000 training plans, 10,000 training plans, and keep doing so in an asynchronous type way that works for, these fans that are based potentially in America, Canada, the UK, different parts of Europe, etc. So what we decided to do is to kind of build that infrastructure, which is kind of the first of its kind that allows that personalization at scale. So on our platform, fitness creators can build, their training plans and their styles. And it then gets automatically calibrated to each of their fans' ability through performance data and so forth.
That is interesting. So it's pulling in data from a lot of different arenas. It's not just hosting the content. It's understanding how users are engaging with the content and how even the trainers themselves or the professionals using the platform can optimize what they're putting out based on the needs of their audience. Is that a correct read?
Yeah, it's a good read. So like creators can, kind of benefit from the collective intelligence of, thousands of different users and kind of see, A, what's kind of working, what types of content they want to put out there more, is their strength programs more popular? It's impossible for them to know, how much 1,000 different people can lift at the gym, right? That's our job to benchmark, collect that data, and then provide that customization without kind of human input from the creator side of things. So yeah, they can focus on what you said, right? The motivation, the community, creating the content, and so forth.
Absolutely. You take care of the boring stuff to some people. In the world that we live in here at Bose, we're all about that boring stuff. And we actually get really excited when we hear about integrations. That's been a big part of our technological push over the past year and going into 2024. And it's been really eye-opening to talk to a lot of different founders and learn that that's the crux of a lot of, I think, the big solutions today. It's getting siloed data into one place and making sense of it all. I think a lot of that has to do with why you're seeing AI everywhere, because it helps enable a lot of those integrations that you're seeing in platforms like Boast, and I'm sure like MyArk. But could we talk a little bit too about some of the unique technology that has gone into building MyArk and just what that looks like and some of the unique innovation and R&D maybe that's going into your product today and what that will bear out in the future?
Yeah, a great question. So right now we have two different apps. We've got a creator app and a consumer app. So the creator app you can think of as a SaaS tool for the fitness creator to, you know, build their programs, have analytics. And what we see is that we needed to build a system from scratch. There is no open source for exercise databases, et cetera. So we've had to build our own from scratch. And by doing so, we have a huge standardized database of different exercises that we have been able to categorize in certain ways that lets us build models in the future to further personalize it for the end consumer and even for the plan creation on the supply side for the creators. So everything has been built in-house, and it will enable us to, you know, our mission is to hyper-personalize everything for the creators and for the consumers. And you really need some a really solid infrastructure to do so.
I love that point too, that it is for the creators and the consumers. So you're not just exclusively a B2B in a super oversimplified term, serving this creator audience. You're also having that B2C component. There's two sides to it. MyArk is going to be the middle ground more or less for both the users and the players, which I think, again, is another very unique value prop compared to what else I've seen out there. Now, in actually building MyArk and pulling together the team that has built the product that you see here today, can you give me a little bit of background on how that all came together? Just a little more light around the Genesis story and also some of the incubators or accelerators or just community partners that have helped you give lift to MyArk and get this off the ground.
Yeah, so my two technical co-founders, Arahan and Nikhil, I actually had been working with Arahan before on a different company, which actually pivoted into MyArk. So we were building a computer vision system to track your form as you exercise. So we got, you know, pose estimation tech to work on any terrible iPhone. So even an iPhone 4, you put it down, you squat in front of it, and it will go green if you're squatting correctly, red if you're not hitting a specific, you know, range of motion. And we started looking at angles and knees, etc. So we've been working together, had a good rapport from that. And Arahan had done engineering at Imperial with Nikhil, a year apart, and slightly different departments, but still in engineering. And they were very good friends. And Nikhil is also an excellent engineer. So when we were pivoting, we needed, you know, to kind of have more hands on deck. And Nikhil was just, you know, I think excellent from the start and stayed on with it. So that's kind of how we all started working together. And what really helped us build MyArk to where it is now is, I would say, you know, the investment from Techstars and the support from them, because it enabled everyone to quit their jobs. I was the only full-time person, which I don't recommend any founder to do. But once we got the investment from Techstars, you know, Arahan and Nikhil got to quit their jobs, and we were able to just, you know, work full time. And that makes a huge difference, enabled us to kind of prove the concept, show that we can scale creators' earnings, and even show, you know, thousands of users getting fit, overcoming obesity, etc. But Techstars was a really powerful catalyst for us.
I love that. And I think that's something that we hear a lot from members of our community, even if it's not pure play investment from accelerators like Techstars, just having access to that community of resources. And I also love that you had mentioned earlier too that the company has actually pivoted from your original goals. And I think that's something that has also become a recurring theme on this podcast. A lot of the founders that we talk to, they have had to pivot, especially in the past year or two, just because maybe their original hypothesis didn't necessarily have the problem-solving capabilities that they expected it would, and they had to tweak the solution, or maybe there just wasn't necessarily a customer base. Or I think in your case, you found a stronger use case for what you guys could pull together and a larger problem that you guys could solve with it. So moving away from, again, just recommending to that user what the best practices are for their physical health and into actually getting the creators and the users involved in all of it, it's such a more robust offering. And that's really, really cool. And I love to hear that you weren't afraid to not to get grim, kill the baby, more or less, because that's what happens in a lot of scenarios. And I guess, could you maybe talk to maybe some of the fears or apprehensions you had when you needed to make that pivot and how you got over that?
Yeah, so I was going gym to gym like a door-to-door salesman, and I went to over 100 plus gyms in London, just speaking with the PTs at the time, with the computer vision, the old idea. And, you know, it got pretty good, you know, adoption if people wanted to kind of use it. We had gym trials of some Pure Gyms, Virgin Active ones here in London. But we started to kind of realize that it was more of a feature than a company, where it wasn't really solving anything critical. And instead, it looked like an onboarding feature where, you know, you go onto it, you see where you are, and then you can retest it a few months later. It didn't seem like people would be using it every single day, or using it as like they'd have to rely on it for their fitness. And in terms of the PT, because they're there in there in person with them, it didn't make that much sense either. The reason we decided to pivot was because going to all these different gyms, meeting hundreds of trainers, I started to meet some trainers who actually had a big audience online. And a lot of these trainers who now are creators weren't making any money from their followers. Even though they had 100,000 plus followers, they were still selling PDF, Excel sheets, ebooks online to their followers, the same ones I was buying over 10 years ago when I was obese from the first ever kind of Facebook influencers. So the state of the art was still from 2010. And that's probably the reason why, like, the majority of creators aren't able to monetize. You know, I think out of the 203 million creators, 60-70% are making more than $1,000 a year, right? And I think it's a very vertical specific software is needed. If you're a fitness content creator, you need very specific functionality to be able to give that offering to your fan base. You can't just use OnlyFans or Patreon or Kajabi, really. That's more for a very generic course type thing. So that's kind of where it kind of came to be.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Again, I like that too. You were able to recognize that the original offering was more of a feature, and that doesn't mean that it had any less value, but it wasn't solving an acute problem, especially if you're there face to face. Whereas I love how you said the state of the art is still in 2010. I think we all have to look at the calendar a little more and realize how quickly the past few years have gone and how much has advanced and how much has gone stale while we've all been working from home or dealing with the pandemic. To that point I made earlier, I've been rewatching YouTube videos for some fitness, and I know that they are from probably 2012, 2013 at this point. So I need to just get my own practice up to date, but knowing that there are solutions too that are bringing this and kind of just like my arc, amplifying all the good that's out there and bringing it to people on both sides, both the creators and the consumers. That is awesome to hear. Now, I'd love to know too, going into 2024, I know it's the end of February here, so we're already off to the races, but could you tell me a little bit about what's in store for MyArk over the next year, what your goals are, and maybe any future pivots you might be making to capture a larger audience even?
Yeah, great question. So for us, we're really looking to double down on the personalization tech that we've been building, because consumers have been loving it, sharing their dashboards like crazy, almost like how in Strava people are sharing that consistently. And these dashboards are all very unique to the user, you know, how many reps they've done, which muscle groups they're working. And that's on a unique basis. So doubling down on that tech to even apply more kind of exercise science principles as well to give them a more personalized experience. And the other part that we're seeing is the community element of things. So we've got communities with the creator and the fans all interacting and fan-to-fan interaction. And that's really helped with accountability, engagement, and usage. So kind of making that more of a central focus, gamifying that as well. We've seen so many kind of interesting user behaviors where like users are making subgroups within these groups, looking for workout buddies, people even meeting up in real life to work out together from neighboring cities, etc. So the community element is really interesting. And then the third side of things is, of course, continuing to improve and expand the offering for the creators. That's a separate app in itself. So giving them more analytics, you know, where their traffic is coming from, showing them, you know, how they can plan their content better. Because every day they use a dashboard, they see how much they're earning, they see the signups coming in, they start to match it with the content. You can see ROI per reel, for TikTok, etc. So really supporting them on that business offering, better analytics, and letting them expand their offering, as you said, to capture a bigger market. So there are some interesting things we're looking at there as well, between removing degrees of separation between the fans and creators. So lots to come.
Oh, that is so awesome. And I know you alluded to it earlier, but this is going to increase the ability for folks in this industry to actually monetize what they're doing and to actually make a business for themselves out of it. It's not just branding. I think a lot of people think, hey, you're a fitness influencer. That just means you're following likes on Instagram or you're following views on YouTube. It's so much more than that. You got to actually pay the bills and you're giving really valuable help to people. You're improving their physical health. That should be monetized. You should be getting what you put into it. So I love to hear that. Finally, Peter, I'd love to know, for founders who are listening, what's some advice that you would give them about getting a startup off the ground in today's market? I know we hear a lot of doom and gloom in the headlines. I know that you're based in London, so we're taking a much more of a global view than we usually do on this show. But I think the headwinds are the same no matter where you're working and no matter where you are in the startup space, especially considering that funding comes from anywhere and everywhere. So tell me a little bit, again, sage wisdom for folks who would like to get going in 2024.
Oh, I think getting the right team around you is really important. So people with complementary skill sets, which I'm sure you've heard before. But if you are building a technical product, then you do want some people who have really good technical expertise to help you build it, because that reduces your reliance on funding. You don't have to go and, you know, raise X amount to go and get some developers to go and build it. If you can build it yourself, that's a bonus. And literally just go and test it and see from day one, will people pay from it? So even with our, and pardon the word, shittiest version of the product, we never made it kind of free. We always wanted to see if people would pay for it. And even at its shittiest version, people were paying for it. And I remember this, one of the first creators we launched was able to make, you know, a few thousand bucks a month from it, which at the time was great because that's more money than, you know, a lot of creators we've been getting from sponsorships and so forth. And that was of the worst product we have ever built. but it still validated that the demand was there. And, you know, you can start to see reasons why people would churn from that shitty product for you to kind of further iterate and actually map out what the product timeline looks like and your acquisition strategy and so forth. So that's what I would recommend. Just try and build it yourself as quick as you can, put it out there and monetize from the beginning to see if, you know, if people actually want to pay for it, if people want to use it or there's demand for it. And the best, I think, indicator, or one of the best, is will people who don't know you part with their money to go and use it? That, I think, that's a very strong indicator.
Absolutely. I'm going to echo a few points that you made there that I think are critical to folks too. That technical expertise and bringing it in-house, I can't emphasize enough how much I think that can be a game changer for folks, not only because you have the person who can make those changes or make that new engineering and development at arm's length, but it also opens up opportunities for funding down the line. Basically, if you are driving unique innovation, if you're uncovering technological uncertainty, if you are doing the hard R&D that does solve hard problems and is unique, governments want to help pay for that. So depending on where you do business, you can recoup a huge share of those engineering talents' payrolls, for instance, or even the material costs that go into making some of this stuff. So it's not just for software providers, it's not just for platforms, even people working in hardware. Get that technical talent on your team and make sure that you're keeping an eye towards the R&D tax credits or any kind of non-dilutive innovation funding that can cover those costs, help you recoup some of the investment you're making anyways. It's money you're already spending. You want to get it back and stretch those dollars further. So even beyond just being technologically savvy, that is just good financial planning, I think.
I was going to say 100% with that, because like it's also cheaper than equity, right? If you build it yourself and then, you know, let's say you're not making your cash flow negative, but the R&D credits will make it cheaper for you in the long run. And guess what? You haven't given away 25% of your company straight away.
Absolutely. You're holding on to a greater share of your product. And it also ultimately, it takes some math, and I'm not an accountant myself, but it will lower your tax liability in the long run if you're taking advantage of these credits to expense a lot of those investments you're making. So it unlocks a virtuous cycle. We have a webinar that folks can check out to hear more about how to unlock all of that, and I'll make sure that's in the show notes. But I agree completely, Peter. I think that that is something that I really hope that founders listening take to heart. Another point, too, was go and test on day one. That's huge. Getting those customer testimonials. I mean, you're not only going to refine your MVP, like you were saying, you might have started with that shitty MVP at day one, but you evolve it because you're listening to the customers. And those people are more than just test cases. It's more than just people who are contributing to your R&D because you're researching how they actually interact with it. Those are people who down the line will be paying for your customer, will be paying for your product, will be advocating for your product, will be telling their friends about the product and telling their network connections and investors about the product. So make sure that you're validating early. I just really want to pull that back because it'll save you a lot of time. You won't get so bogged down in your R&D that you've built something completely without understanding how it's actually going to be received. And again, you go to market then with a built-in customer base, and there's nothing better than that. So I think that is fantastic advice, Peter. Peter, before we sign off, could you tell me about some of the success stories from the creators who have used MyArk so far?
Yeah, so we've had some incredible success stories with our fitness creators, you know, who went from making minimum wage, almost no kind of revenue from their socials, to now being on the verge of becoming millionaires, right? So we have people making tens of thousands per month. We have creators who literally were in government-assisted housing, now, you know, on six figures, etc. So for us, we've seen creators in different parts of the world, you know, based in the UK, Europe, US, even in Africa, West Africa, basically becoming top 1% earners in their respective jurisdictions and even almost globally as well. So we're really proud to see that not only have we been able to help their fans get fit and, you know, help them overcome obesity, all that sort of stuff, we've also economically empowered lots of fitness creators to live their dreams.
That is the best kind of success story too. It's when you're spreading the success among your users. You're actually, again, monetizing the work that these fitness professionals are doing and helping them build a career out of it. I love that. Peter, I cannot thank you enough. This was a fantastic chat. Thank you so much for hopping on with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, lovely to meet you as well.